The next case in our calendar is 05-227 and 228, City of Norwood versus Joseph Horney and Carl Gamble. Justice Resnick has recused herself in this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge James Brogan, Judge of the Court of Appeals in the Second District. Welcome back, Judge Brogan.
Thank you, Chief.
Mr. Gall.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Burt Gall, and I'm the attorney for the appellants, Carl and Joy Gamble, and Joseph Horney, and Carol Gooch. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal time, if I may. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Your Honors, this is obviously a case of great importance to my clients, particularly Carl and Joy Gamble, who are fighting to get back their home of 35 years, the first and only home they have ever owned. But this is also a very important case for all property owners, all home and business owners throughout Ohio, who face losing their properties to other private parties who want to use their land to build shopping malls, condominiums, and other private projects. Your holding will determine whether private parties that essentially rent out city's eminent domain powers can, with absolutely no check at all from the courts, bulldoze homes and businesses before the appellate courts can vindicate.
Well, the issue here is a little more narrow, isn't it,
Counsel?
That's
not our case, sir. That's not our case. That's the next case.
Yes, Your Honor, what we're talking about, though, under 163.19 is ensuring that when courts have the ability to vindicate those important rights, and more importantly, that homeowners and business owners who have been affected by their homes being taken actually have a chance to get those back.
Isn't your point that if the anti-injunctive statute is applied to a person who loses their home, who don't want the money, they just want to stay in their home, that if the city bulldozes the property, they have no incentive to pursue this matter on principal purposes because in the end they can get no more damages than they would get from the assessed jury verdict in the case? But isn't the question in this case rather narrow, extremely narrow, and that is, do you concede that if Rookwood takes title back to this property, this court is without power to issue an injunction?
Your Honor, if an appropriating agency has the property, so if Norwood has property, if it had kept title to this particular property, it could have demolished or damaged the homes.
Won't Rookwood just simply give the title back to the city and moot this question we've got before us?
Well, Your Honor, for one thing, it hasn't done that. And second, if it did, that would certainly raise a lot of different factual questions that fortunately aren't before us today. For example, the appropriating agency, instead of receiving the property initially through condemnation proceedings, would have received it through, you know, a transfer, you know, back from Rookwood Partners or from whatever development group. So there could be a long, and feasibly under some hypothetical, there could be some very long extended line of transfers of property that then go back to the
appropriating agency. Well, this great principle you're talking about, in the future, what if all the cities simply retain title, destroy the property, and bill Rookwood or the developer for the cost of the demolition?
Your Honor, all we're asking the court to do is interpret RC 163.19 as it is written, and it's only meant to prevent injunctions against appropriating agencies. All the time, this is not a problem that is unique to this case. Parties will find and try and create unique ways to circumvent this court's law, but that has never been a reason not to apply the law as written. I'll offer you an example. In your case, Ryan versus City of Gehenna, that involved bond issuance under Section 13 of Article 8 of the Ohio Constitution. In that case, you struck down a bond arrangement that the city had put in place where the bonds were going to be the credit was going to be tax revenues that were coming in instead of the full faith and credit of the city. As the majority noted, and as the dissent noted in that opinion as well, it would have been quite easy with just a few flicks of the wrist on an ordinance to change that arrangement. It would not have been difficult at all for them to get around the court's holding, yet the court still adhered to the actual text of the provision in place and the actual intent of the legislature and the people.
So this is a very narrowly drawn issue for us with respect to the application of 163 to other than the appropriating agency. That's about it.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, the sole question is, does 163.19 prevent the issuance of injunctions against non-agencies?
Right.
And the term agency is defined by RC 163.01 as parties that are authorized to appropriate.
So you're
property.
Looking for a rule of law written by this court that says what?
Your Honor, that RC 163.19 does not bar the issuance of injunctions against parties that are not agencies under RC 163.01. That is the rule of law that we are asking for this court to announce. And that rule of law is supported by both the text of RC 163.09 in addition to this court's interpretation of that provision in the past. RC 163.19 occurs in a particular context, and that is 163.05 through to 163.22, which describe condemnation proceedings and set forth the relationship between a condemning agency or an appropriating agency and a property owner. That is the relationship that is contemplated. And 163.19 intends for agencies, appropriating agencies, to be shielded against the issuance of an injunction. That language should not be extended to apply to a party that is not part of that relationship that is included within 0.05 through 0.22.
Has the agency, Norwood here, has paid the deposit, right? Because I guess Rookwood gave Norwood the money to pay the deposit for the judgment. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you would argue that that Norwood here is sort of acting as the alter ego of Rookwood, just doing their bidding, so to speak. And so Rookwood should not be protected in that instance. Is that?
Well, I'm saying that Rookwood, the private developer in this case, should not be protected because right. It is not an appropriating agency. It may have title to the property. We're not arguing, by the way, that Norwood cannot, you know, transfer title while the proceedings continue and do things that it may feel like it needs to do with its project, but it cannot, you know, get that benefit that 163.19 provides. And it's important to remember, preventing the issuance of an injunction, that's an extraordinary thing, even in the context of appropriating agencies.
Well, what's extraordinary about this statute, in the interest of expedition for condemnation, in effect, a property owner gets one shot at deciding whether, in fact, the right to take was actually correct, that the city is actually using its condemnation powers properly, because the statute, 163.09, says the right to take issue is not a final appealable order. Specifically, it's not a final appealable order. And the only effective relief for you and your clients is to have been able to appeal under 2505.06, the final appeal voter statute, the right to take issue. That's the heart of this case, whether this taking for private development purposes violates the Ohio Constitution, since the Fifth Amendment question has already been resolved. But what incentive do they have if, in fact, the city comes in and takes their property and bulldozes it? All they can get is damages at the end of the thing that may not be any different than the damages for the assessed value of the property, which the city was prepared to pay them in the first place. Isn't that correct?
Well, Your Honor, you're correct that there is certainly an incentive in place for developers to go ahead and bulldoze, because you must wait to appeal until the compensation hearing is decided. That is the only point where you get a final judgment. But as this court has said in Cincinnati Gas and Electric versus Pope, the property owner still has the right to get his property back, even if it is damaged or destroyed. And this court was very clear about that in both Cincinnati Gas and Electric versus Pope. It was also very clear about that in Suburban Construction Company versus Skok, in the Horwitz case that is also
mentioned. How do you get property back that's been destroyed?
Your Honor, I mean, first of all, the physical property is still there. The courts can still fashion some sort of remedy. And we don't have to get to exactly what that remedy may be down the line. But if there is still some remedy that can be fashioned, whether it be returning the building, to our clients, that is certainly one possibility. In fact, early on, you know, the trial court noted when it initially denied our motion for an injunction pending appeal that Rookwood Partners assumes the risk. It assumes the risk that may indeed happen one day.
But what's the incentive, assuming that we make this decision this way, that you suggest that we shouldn't give a broad read to to 16309 and include this private developer as part as an agency, the cities will simply retain the property. They'll retain the title and tear down the property.
Your Honor, they very well may do that, but that is no reason not to apply the statute as written. It is clear and undisputed, and certainly Rookwood and the city do not argue, that Rookwood is an appropriating agency under RC 163.01. That is clear. Rookwood does not have the power to appropriate property in the courts of this state.
Counsel, I want to follow up on the question you were just asked. And I think you're at least being encouraged to argue something a little broader than you've argued, and that is when the necessity of the take or the constitutionality of the take is in play, the bar against injunctive relief or the failure to protect the property from being demolished is an unconstitutional deprivation of an effective right to an appeal.
I mean, Your Honor,
is it?
It is certainly a deprivation. It is a deprivation of the right to get your property back because once you have vindicated your constitutional rights.
But you did not challenge the constitutionality. That's not at issue.
Let's have one question at a time.
I'm sorry.
I can answer one question. Why don't you finish Justice Piper's question?
I have the same practical question, or as I look at this case, the same practical issue that's been raised by the question about a transfer back. If we were to rule what you're asking us to rule, and the local courts have already made a decision that this is okay, this appropriation meets the reach of what communities are allowed to do, then why would they grant an injunction if we said they have the authority to grant the injunction? So might we not end up in the same place? You win, you go back, they don't grant the injunction, and then if we look at the underlying case, the constitutional issue, which is an open question yet at this point, we're looking at something that's essentially a moot case as it concerns your property owners.
Well, Your Honor, and let me be clear, we're not saying that a property owner would automatically get an injunction during this process. He would have to demonstrate the four elements of injunctive relief, and many property owners will not be able to do that.
Why would he have to show that? But for this legislation, which the legislature has apparently felt the need for expedition in condemnation cases and therefore said you cannot appeal the take issue because it's not a final appealable order, and then once the assessment is made by the jury and the cash is deposited by the condemning party, then the courts are impotent to intervene. They can't issue injunctions. If, in fact, this legislation were changed, why wouldn't an ordinary stay be appropriate? That is, that that a stay should be granted by the court under the appellate rules because the relief that your client wants to save his house can't be preserved if a stay isn't granted.
Well, Your Honor, traditionally, I mean, a stay would apply as to the appropriating agency because it's the party whom the judgment has been in favor. And right now, 163.19 does not permit that to happen. Certainly, I mean, under a new version of the law that took away this extraordinary protection, then certainly a stay would be appropriate if we weren't dealing with this particular statute. But once again, to bring it back, we're dealing with whether the immunity from injunctions or stays, for that matter, that has been granted to appropriating agencies can somehow be transferred without any indication of legislative intent on that part to non-agencies under RC 163.
That's a very narrow question, though. You're not saying that 16309 is unconstitutional. You're simply saying that when you look at the statute, 163.19, as it the provision you're talking about, that that has to be applied narrowly to the agency or the private agency as defined by the statute.
Yes, Your Honor, that is exactly what we're saying, and that is exactly how this court has interpreted it in the past, and that is exactly what the structure of Chapter 163 and the text of RC 163.19 support.
The last, Mr. Bezinger.
Yeah, I do have. I would like to ask mine. Thank you. Sure. As I understand it, and I think Judge Brogan pointed out, you have not challenged the constitutionality of the statute. You have challenged the sort of the passing on of the protection to a private developer, if I'm correct. And if we rule in your favor, the argument will be that Rockwood cannot destroy this property. What would be your position then if Rockwood would simply transfer the property back to the city?
Well, Your Honor, you are correct in terms of what our argument is. It is not a constitutional argument. But if the property were transferred back, which is not this case, but if it were to do that, I think it would present a lot of different factual questions because, once again, 163.19 contemplates that the agency is going to have received the property through condemnation. A transferring it to another party who then maybe either transfers it directly back or goes through a chain of transfers to get the property back to Rookwood would present some really difficult and interesting factual questions. Would it be a harder case? Probably yes, but it seems like those are some really thorny issues.
So really, if we rule in your favor, our decision really will only help you and your client, because in the future, nobody's going to transfer the property to a private developer until they exercise their condemnation.
Your Honor, that may not be. I mean, it's certainly in situations like this, for example, where you see more and more developers pay for everything. You will probably still see, transfers that take place. But even so, even if...
Well, they won't transfer if they can't destroy.
Even if cities curb their behavior, developers curb their behavior in light of today's decision, once again, that's no reason not to interpret the statute as written and to treat Rookwood as an appropriating agency. If that problem comes up and there is a real circumvention, that would certainly be a time for the legislature to step in and say, we've got a problem here. I see I've gone over my time.
Let me just ask you, the statutory construction, point 19, the last phrase of the statute says the right to take, after the deposit's been made and so forth, by the agency. Then it says the right to take and use the property appropriated shall not be affected by such review of the appellate courts. It doesn't confine that appeal to an appeal by the agency. Just it's written broad enough to say, no matter who's appealing, the statute applies, isn't it?
Well, no, Your Honor, and because as this Court has emphasized before, statutes must be read in their broader overall statutory context. And 163.19 occurs within, 0.05 to 0.2, which specifically discuss a relationship between the condemning agency, or the appropriating agency, I should say, and the property owner. And so the right to take and use that's being talked about is the right of the appropriating agency, because no third party, except for the court, I should add, has been introduced into that particular relationship. So you really have to read 163.19 in context, in its wording in context.
It appears that the General Assembly did not anticipate this situation, this set of circumstances.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I don't think it did anticipate it. And for that reason, 163.19 should not be extended.
So you would insert the word, the right of the agency to take and use the property of privilege shall not be affected, as modifying when the agency pays and deposits the money, the right of the agency to use the property shall not be affected by such review by the appellate courts.
Your Honor, no words need to be inserted. The statute only has to be read within its particular context. You can certainly argue, perhaps, that the statute was inartfully drafted or something like that. That wouldn't be the first time a statute suffered from that.
Can it mean that the right to use the property by the agency shall not be affected, so they transfer the title and Rookwood destroys the property?
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If the right to use the property by the agency shall not be affected, and that's how you read this, what prevents them from transferring it to another person and let that other person do with it they want?
Well, Your Honor, because that other person is not an agency under RC 163.01. That doesn't mean that Norwood or other cities cannot, you know, actually transfer the title. But what they cannot do is do what the legislature did not do. The legislature did not grant the protection against injunctions or stays. And so Norwood or any other city acting unilaterally cannot decide, okay, when we transfer this property, you will be treated in that fashion as well.
The legislature...
Sorry.
I was going to say you're also ignoring the words, but in all cases. And it doesn't say just cases involving... It doesn't limit 163-119 to just cases that you're specifically talking about here. It says in all cases. And then when you read the section cited by the Chief Justice, it does make sense. We're talking about the agency putting the jury amount into deposit, which I understand was over $200,000 for each of your clients here, deposited in the account, and that way you don't have the problem of the stay, because it's very clear if you read the statute as it is.
Your Honor, first of all, in all cases is followed by in all cases where the agency pays or deposits the amount of the award assessed. The parties that are discussed in this statute, just like they are throughout 105 through 22, are two parties. Once again, the appropriating agency and the person whose property is being condemned. Those are the parties, and that's also how this court has interpreted that statute. If you read Cincinnati Gas, if you read Suburban Construction Company versus Skoke, they speak of the right of the appropriating agency to damage or destroy the property. They don't speak of the right of third parties to do it. This court has been very clear and specific.
Have there been any third parties in other cases that were at issue the way these are?
No, Your Honor. Both Cincinnati Gas and Skoke did not involve that. But once again, that still doesn't change. At the end of the day, Brookwood Partners is not an appropriating agency under 163.01.
Thank you, Mr. Gall.
Thank you.
Mr. Burke.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Court. My name is Tim Burke. I'm special counsel to the City of Norwood. Seated at the far end of council table is Mr. Ted Kaiser, who is the Assistant Law Director of the City of Norwood. I would like to use no more than 10 minutes of my time and let Mr. Vanderlaan, who represents Rookwood, take the remainder of that time.
Your red light will come on at the end of 10 minutes, and so you'll need to try to disassociate yourself from that podium, even though we're going to be asking you questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will do my best to do exactly that. I do believe that this is an extremely narrow case that is before you today. And the Court, many of you have already hit on the key phrases that are contained in 163.19. But in all cases is a very general prohibition against the issuance of injunctive relief. The requirement is, did the municipality post with the court the amount established by the jury? And there is no question that that was done in this case. One phrase of 163.19 that has not been discussed at this point does answer Judge Brogan's question about what remedies potentially exist here for the property owners, because they had the ability to ask the trial court to require adequate security for any further compensation and costs as required by the court. That could have been.
They don't want the money. They want to save their house.
Judge, I understand that, but the fact of the matter is what all of this is in the end measured against is their personal property rights versus the public welfare. And that's exactly what the Ohio Constitution sets up the test
to be. The U.S. Supreme Court just decided a case that was so narrowly decided, 5-4. And in that case, Justice Stevens suggested that if this causes heartburn for people out there in the hinterland, and it did, there's legislation in this state been introduced to put a moratorium on the very thing they did in this case and in Kelo. Now, he suggested that if you can't find comfort in the Fifth Amendment, maybe your states will provide you some relief in their state constitution. And that is, find that there's greater protection in our state constitution to protect the taking of this property. If you cannot appeal the right to take issue, and if the city deposits the money. It's your point they have an immediate right to take the property and destroy the property. Isn't that your view?
Yes, Your Honor. That is my point in
effect,
the end.
The right to take issue for all practical purposes gets one shot in Ohio at the trial court level.
Keep in mind, Your Honor, that in this case, that one shot was a long 5-day trial.
But it's not you don't get an appeal to the appellate court that has any practical effect.
In this case, Your Honor, there has indeed been an appeal, and a unanimous court found in support.
Is that because an injunction was actually issued in this case that you think should not have been issued?
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that it should not have been issued. In fact, I did argue that it should not have been issued. And as this court knows, we've argued it up here already.
Aren't you arguing that
it shouldn't have been issued?
You are the other side, Rookwood, arguing that this case is indeed moot?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe this case is in fact moot because the injunction that was originally sought was an injunction pending the appeal to the Hamilton County Court of Appeals. That's now been completed.
It's not moot because what happens when they take their property? It's not moot then, is it? If they destroy the property, is it moot?
Your Honor, I believe
if Rookwood tears their property down, is the case moot?
No, Your Honor, not necessarily. They have a right to continue with their appeal should this court choose to hear the appeal on the merits. And obviously we hope
What can they get at the end of the day?
What they could have done under 16319 is they could have asked the trial court to require the city to post additional security.
Okay, what is that beyond the assessed value of the property? What does 16321 provide them in terms of beyond the actual assessed value the jury gave them in the first place?
Theoretically, at least, the trial court could have said if the city wants to ensure that the property can be taken down, then they're going to have to post something the equivalent of a bond. And in the end, it's going to come down to dollars.
Okay.
It is not, in my opinion, going to come down to returning the property to them. But it may very well be some compensation in addition to the market value of the home or the business.
Why should we give a broad read to an anti-injunctive statute, which this is?
Your Honor, I do not believe it requires a broad read at all. I think it simply requires reading the plain language of the statute.
Okay. In all cases where the agency deposits the money.
And in fact, Your Honor, that's exactly what happened. The agency deposited the money. And it goes on to say, once that occurs, the right to go forward shall not be affected by such review. The right to take and use the property in this case, what everybody understood all along was that the use to which this property was going to be put was defined by a contract between Rookwood and the City of Norwood that required Rookwood to accept the property and build, among other things, two 1,000-car parking garages that would be owned by the City of Norwood. In addition to that, they would be required to build over 200,000 square feet of new retail space and over 300,000 square feet of new office space and over 200 new residential units. And I'd suggest to the court that under the Constitution of the State of Ohio, the development of housing, the development and preservation of jobs, and the elimination of the numerous deteriorating, and as deteriorating is a factor defined in 725 when it comes to talking about urban renewal projects, and the elimination of the issues which led to the City of Norwood to find the area to be an urban renewal area. Those were all public purposes that are being accomplished by going forward with the use that was intended here, and that's the development of the new project, which is going to be built by Rookwood, but which will include public facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Counsel, the statute and the prohibition against injunction, would it not be a fair assessment of the real world in terms of the Uniform Act for Eminent Domain that the jurisprudence of this court has been that on contesting the necessity of the take, that's a dead bang loser. It's extremely difficult if any agency spreads upon its official minutes a determination by the director of that department, the consul of a community, that they find there is a need to take our cases and the lower court cases following that, make that exceedingly difficult to challenge. Would that be a fair statement?
Your Honor, I would not disagree with that. I believe it should be exceedingly difficult to challenge. Because
given that, then, the provision or the prohibition against an injunction once you've gone to trial, this is not a quick take like highways have.
Correct.
Where you deposit the money and you can take the property immediately. The prohibition against injunction after you've gone to trial would not ordinarily seem to be an unreasonable conclusion by the General Assembly, because the matters that are going to be litigated on appeal are evidentiary matters, assessment of the believability of appraisers, whether the property lines are correct, and those kinds of issues, and not the right to take. So that's very unlikely that that's going to be something the property owner is trying to litigate on appeal, if they're appealing.
Well, in this case
— they are. And that's where I'm going with my question is, here they're litigating not just the necessity, but they're litigating the constitutionality. So this case is a rare bird. This is new. Or new,
I'm not
totally new, but it's not an issue. We've seen it since I've been here one other time.
And, Your Honor, in fact, it's not new at all. It is at least half a century old if you go back to Bristol versus Rich, because this case is not significantly different from Bristol in this court or Berman versus Parker in the United States Supreme Court. It involves the same specific issues, the constitutionality.
That's correct. It's that the constitutionality is being litigated and challenged is new, and that's going to be unfolding all over the country after the Supreme U.S.
Oh, especially
Supreme
since Court. The U.S. Supreme Court hung it on you all to figure out what to do with the
issue. There was an invitation to property owners to do exactly that. So,
yes, sir.
So when the General Assembly is putting that prohibition against injunction in place, they're contemplating what is pretty subtle law. And now we have a situation in which someone's trying to unsettle that. And I think Judge Brogan's point is there doesn't seem to be any effective way to keep a case in play to really get
Honor,
that.
Under 163.19, I frankly think that that's correct. That the legislature has determined that when it comes to the development of public projects, and I know counsel will argue this is not a public project. We would argue that it would, and we were successful at both the trial court and the appellate court level on those issues. But even this court said in CG&E versus Pope that the reason for this statute was to encourage the speedy development of public projects, and that's why the legislature apparently did not provide for injunction. Here, the benefits to be obtained by the city of Norwood are for the general welfare, which is what the Ohio Constitution talks about in saying we're going to balance the inviolability of property rights, but they are subservient to the public welfare.
Okay. So what's the answer for the property owner who wants to contest either the necessity or, as in this case, the constitutionality? Is it because of this statute, if you want to keep the property from being destroyed, is it a constant and perpetual request for a stay rather than an injunction?
If a stay is possible here, and that I am not sure it is, given the existence of 163.19.
Why not simply make the take a final appealable order?
Well, again, Your Honor, the legislature could do that. They have not.
Right. I assume the legislature is going to be surprised to find out that people have to lose their home and then later argue the constitutionality of the question of whether their home was taken in violation of the Ohio Constitution.
Your Honor, there may be some who would say that they are surprised, but the fact of the matter is with urban renewal projects all around the state of Ohio in virtually every major American city, that's exactly what has happened for some 50 years now.
Well, and you talk about blighted. The blighted case is that isn't this case, is it?
Yes,
this
Your Honor,
case
it is.
Didn't the court find it was deteriorating?
Deteriorating in danger of becoming blighted. And 725.
Yeah, but it's not blighted. It's not blighted.
Your Honor, 725, the Ohio Revised Code, defines blight to include deteriorating. I see I'm almost out of time, and I want to be certain that I've reserved time
now
for
you're
Mr.
leaving
Bannon.
Mr. Vandalone about a minute and a half.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Mr. Vandalone.
May it please the Court, Mark Vanderlaan for Rookwood. A couple points that I think need to be stressed here. This is a situation where if one looks, I mean, we have an odd situation because our position is that the plain language of this statute requires that there be no injunction because it was complied with fully. The money was paid by the agency. And what we're talking about here is the agency, meaning Norwood's, right to take and use the property. If one looks at what the appellants are arguing here, they want to read out in any meaningful way the term and use the property. The other thing that has not been brought out here, but which is important if one is looking at the whole question of injunctions or what's equitable, this is a case where the money not only has been paid into the court, but in both cases involving both appellants, they have used that money. In one case, $13,000 was removed from the award already, and in the other case, $85,000 was removed from the award. So,
to pay their lawyers, right?
In one case, to pay a lawyer. In another case, to pay a mortgage. But the point is, they have had the opportunity to use those funds since they were deposited, and in fact, they have used them.
Right. Now, the relief they get if, at the end of the rainbow, they determine that the city did not establish either factually the predicate for deteriorating property or that it's unconstitutional to take property from a private person and give it to another person for private development, what do they get? Do they get the attorney's fees when they go through arguing a case to this court, say, 6 months from now, or taking the case here?
Presumably, the additional amount they get, because this, again, the 163.19 talks about it, they can ask, they can seek a requirement that additional security be posted for whatever other damages may arise out of this. They never did.
But attorney's fees are only granted if the statute provides for attorney's fees in Ohio. Do they get attorney's fees?
We don't. In this case, I would say no.
So, in fact, if their houses are taken, they have no incentive to keep going along as ordinary residents of this community and pursue this matter for some purpose of proving that the state constitution prohibited what happened to them?
Presumably, because I think the way the legislature set up the whole eminent domain statutory plan was that at some point, and that point is after the trial on the merits and the deposit of the jury verdict, that at some point the substitution of the property itself is with money. And from that point forward, money is the remedy that is available. That's what the legislature has determined, whether it was in its infinite wisdom or not. That's the way it is. And that's the way it has been for years. There is nothing unique about this particular project. The urban renewal part of it is clear, and the trial court found it to be consistent with the urban renewal laws. This is not a situation where, just for the sake of it, a government entity has taken property just to give it to a private developer. Instead, there is a substantial remediation of that which is determined by law to be part of an appropriate and legal urban renewal scheme.
Thank you, Mr. Vanderlaan. Mr. Gall, you've gone over your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I'll be brief, Your Honor. As an initial matter, Rickwood's and the city's position is that you don't get your property back on appeal under any circumstance. That is thoroughly inconsistent with this court's holding in both Cincinnati Gas and the Scope case. The court was clear in those cases that even though your property could be damaged or destroyed, you do get your property back. Also, there will be constitutional cases where people are arguing right to take and necessity. The legislature made its call on who's protected in this thing by saying agencies are the ones that are protected, because typically if an agency's holding onto the property, it's going to be building something that is a public use.
Do they get the choice? By the way, the statute says the agency shall restore the property to the owner in its original condition or respond in damages. If the house is torn down, why wouldn't they make the choice of responding in damages?
Well, if it is practically possible for the property to be transferred, for title to be defeased and gone back, then that's what should happen. If that is not possible, then perhaps there will have to be some sort of damage remedy down the line.
They erect something on top of it.
That is something that the court may have to confront, but it shouldn't have to confront the issue since Rookwood is not an agency. Can I just close by briefly correcting a misstatement, I'm sorry, by counsel for Rookwood about the money that has been withdrawn? The Gambles withdrew $13,000 for attorney's fees. Joe Horn and Carol Gooch should not withdraw 1 cent from the amount of money that was deposited in court. Their mortgage company, which is an independent defendant in this action, withdrew money. So that is a complete misstatement that I have to correct. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.